Back to Now, a series of podcasts where we celebrate all things related to the variously compiled world of pop. In the company of some wonderful guests, we open up gatefold vinyl sleeves, unfold cassette inlays, slip out CD booklets, and explore how our favourite compilation albums have shaped our lives and now fondly stand as time capsules for our own pop culture journeys. And join in with me, Ian, and the Back to Now social community by searching for the Pop Rambler pages. Joining me for this episode is David Quantick. David is a music journalist and a television, radio and movie writer. His film Book of Love won an Imogen Award in 2022 and he received an Emmy for his work on Veep. David has also written for many other TV shows in the UK and USA, from The Thick of It to Avenue 5, and he is the author of several novels and non-fiction titles too. David, welcome back to Now.
Lovely to be here. Lovely to be here.
So the premise of this podcast is to celebrate what we would describe as the variously compiled world of pop. Previous guests have taken us as far back as the revolving record shop racks of KTEL and Ronco, and we've gone through mixtapes of the Radio 1 chart show right up to the kind of Dayglow Now albums of the 80s. And so I have to ask, where do you stand with regards to the compilation?
Well, like most people, when I was a teenager, a compilation was an extremely useful way of buying things. I sort of missed out on the KTEL generation. I was the right age. I came in during punk and what's now called indie, sadly, independent music. So I enjoyed listening to new wave compilations, but particularly the little labels compilations, people like Rough Trade, Small Wonder and Factory, who did fantastic compilations that were a bit unlike the Now ones in that they had no hits on. Mm. They often had songs that weren't singles and were often terrible. So that was what it was like listening to the John Peel show. And I became a fan of the Now albums. I even wrote the sleeve notes for a rival. I can't remember now what they were called. It was a different conglomerate that had their own version of Now for a short while, but that was fun.
Yeah.
I wrote for Smash Hits, so I felt very much part of that world of slightly irreverent pop. Yeah. I mean, I think the Now albums are great. They were the first turbocharged compilations. They were the first ones to not have nonsense like, oh, the songs are slightly the wrong length, like KTEL, or, oh, this wasn't actually a hit, or, oh, this, we haven't got the right version. Compilations were always a bit of a lottery. The Now albums were the first ones to say, no, we're having all the hits, and they are hits, and they're the right versions of the hits, and they are just two discs of hits. They were relentless.
Yeah.
And they're fantastic, and they're still going, which is incredible.
And I suppose, you know, that's something I was going to ask. You started at NME in 1983, is that right?
Yes, I did.
Which, conveniently, was the year of the first Now album.
Fantastic.
So, you know, we've got a nice bit of synergy, but, you know, they were celebrating the 40th anniversary last year.
Now, 40 years. All we hear is
Radio Gaga. I suppose the point is, could you have imagined this series still running 40 years later?
Well, I think in 1983, they were just another compilation, so I didn't know about them. But no, the idea that nothing has lasted that long, not even leather. So it's quite remarkable that they have continued for this distance, outlasting almost every single one of the groups on them. Although on the compilation I'm on, there's probably at least one band who definitely qualify,
yes,
who could have been on any of the Now albums of the last 40 years,
yeah,
which is astonishing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as you say, it's very much that way of actually compiling what is, and it says on the back of this album that we're looking at the best of the best. It used to be that they talked about the top chart hits, and I suppose in some ways, in 2024, how we're consuming music, how people are defining what is a hit is different than it was, say, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, there's an interesting thing with the album we'll be talking about, which we'll go into then, but the world has changed a great deal since then. I recently read, is it Michael Cragg's book, fantastic book about pop? It starts in the 90s, it goes up to the noughties, and even then, it's a different world of chart return shops. Even the whole TV talent thing has kind of gone away. The weird commercial pop music of the noughties is 25 years ago.
Yeah, Michael's book is brilliant. We had Michael on last year talking about it, and interestingly enough, there's a few artists on here that he talks about in the book that are now almost what you would call retro bands coming back in 2023-24.
We live in a world where S Club 7 are heritage pop.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a classic pop magazine, which is basically the equivalent of keeping your old chewing gum in a catalogue.
Yeah, I suppose the album we're going to look at, it still does what all those now albums did, which was to represent what is current. But where it's drawing tracks from isn't just what used to be that top 40 anymore. And of course, we're seeing tracks on now that are coming from social media, they're coming from TikTok, they're coming from those retro bands doing the circuit again. So it's, in some ways, it is still taking that snapshot of what is current.
Yeah, and I really like that, because taking it from what the vinyl charts would be absurd. Can you imagine a Now 116 album? It would be entirely full of folk music from the 1970s, House Martin's reissues, and God knows what else. It's fascinating to me. I mean, sometimes that can go horribly wrong. America in the 70s, the charts were made up from airplay, which is probably the most corruptible system in the history of the world. But people have always worried about pop. What will happen to it? Where will it go? And the fact that it's coming out of TikTok, it's coming literally out of people's phones, is great, because my whole big theory about music is that it always follows technology. Obviously, rock and roll came along when you had electric guitars. Electric pop came along when you had synthesizers. So now, the fact that the music industry is having to listen to people with telephones is fantastic.
Yeah,
it just keeps it's like whack-a-mole. You know, wherever you knock it down, it emerges somewhere else.
And actually, in some ways, you don't know what's going to emerge next.
Which I absolutely love. And it does mean that, Spotify is a vile thing. I want that on the record. Spotify is basically if Satan was sick. So it's a terrible thing. So, but the fact that people are still finding ways around that is brilliant. Don't get
angry with me. Now 116. Stars, the latest chart hits. I don't care, I paint the now 116. That's what I call music.
So we're going to come to your featured album in a second. You've chosen Now 116, which was released November 23, as we say, 40 years after the first one. So I'm just going to get that plug in there. but before we come to that, and there are 47 tracks on this album, which in itself is interesting because the first Now had 30 songs on it. Again, an indication of how pop culture's changed. You know, a lot of these songs are clocking in at 2 minutes like they would have done in 1952.
I absolutely love that because, you know, the two great eras of music for me are the early rock and roll era, the 60s and punk and new wave. When the single was king, short bursts of music, excitement. I've always felt mildly disturbed by long songs and long tracks. And there's almost a rule of thumb on this album that the longer the song, the older the artist.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite work, but the older acts on this are still chugging out, you know, intro, verse, chorus, solo, all that stuff. The new stuff is wonderful. 2 minutes of like, why would you want more than 2 minutes? It's a loop with a bit of vocals on it. It's catchy, it's fun, it's proper pop music.
Yep.
So, yeah, I love the fact. And why not have more tracks? 47, fantastic. More. They should have made it 50. Yeah. They should have cut the Pretenders song in half. Stopped it halfway through.
Yeah. Those three time periods that you talk about is when pop was often at its most exciting.
Yeah, because it's interesting that the more creative pop is, the more it's brief. It's like, it is the urgency. It's like, I've got something to say, I'm going to say it now, which actually sounds like a punk song. And just the idea that, you know, the 2 minute symphony was always the traditional form of pop. People like Phil Spector literally throwing an orchestra down the stairs, not literally throwing an orchestra down the stairs, and making these teenage symphonies, as they were called. And people are still doing that. And I don't know, the brilliance of, you know, you've got like a 19-year-old woman making something on her laptop that's about, it's deeply personal and about, you know, the fact that she fancies somebody else is brilliant. I was kind of worried about pop music. It particularly in the Simon Cowell years, it seemed to have been taken over by show business again. Mm. Show business isn't good for pop music. It generally ends up in the Vietnam War, if memory serves me right. So I'm full of enthusiasm.
Before we come to that, what kind of early music memories do you have?
Quite conventional ones. My parents weren't a rock and roll family. They liked Nat King Cole and Reader's Digest compilations, a bit of light opera. They liked The Carpenters. So I grew up in very much a Radio 2 household. So my early memories are hearing, I think, Hard Day's Night and Hello Dolly on the radio. I think played together. I don't know if it, so it would have been the light programme. Maybe they were going through the charts alphabetically. I don't know. Then sort of the usual memories of bits of Top of the Pops, and then punk and new wave, which was the big musical thing for me.
Let's move to this CD, actually, because as we say, we have got 47 tracks. There's definitely themes across this album. And I do have to thank you again, David, because you've forced me into places I didn't think I was going to go in some of these tracks. But it's been really interesting doing that. Let's kick off CD 1, track 1, Calvin Harris and Sam Smith with Desire.
One thing that's fascinating about modern music is the feat thing, F-E-A-T. It's an industry thing now. It's like, you know, let's make this record appeal to an urban crowd. Let's get so-and-so on, or let's get the dads in.
Yeah.
And the combinations of people. Calvin Harris must be 90 by now. I exaggerate slightly. He looks good. I did see him on the Brit Awards. Oh, there was a horrific routine about a joke about Saltburn. I nearly punched myself in the face.
Yeah.
But yeah, Calvin Harris is, you know, a dance floor legend. Sam Smith, a little bit younger, often mocked for the fact that he dares to dress up. I mean, who does that in pop music? Dress a bit like a bit of a weirdo. That's outrageous. Put on a suit and know your place, Sam. But this is, I've got to be honest, it's an odd opener for me. It's a little bit generic.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you put on the radio, there's a lot of this stuff. It's very much benchmark pop at the moment.
Yeah.
It's fine, but it's not my favourite thing.
You know, there used to be a thing going through the Now series. There were some artists that always got that track one, side one position. And it was often usually into record company politics, right? So I'm looking at you, Queen, and I'm looking at you, Paul McCartney, and then I'm looking at you, Robbie Williams, and stuff like that. I don't know if Calvin Harris is now actually in that position. It's not a very memorable track.
It's solid.
Yeah.
It's, you know, should you actually put on a CD, it will sort of warn you that the album has started. It's fine. It's not a turkey.
No, and it got to number 6 in the charts, whatever that means nowadays. But it did get to number 6. Its biggest chart performance was Latvia. I just mentioned that in passing. But there we go. And Calvin Harris from Dumfries, as is John Laurie from Dad's Army, and Ray Wilson from Stiltskin. I put that in there.
Just excellent.
Track 2 is proper global star, 2024 style, Olivia Rodrigo and Vampire.
Yeah, I really like her. She seems to have gone to this bit new wavy, famously stolen Elvis Costello riff. He famously defended her. A bit guitar-y, very much high school lyrics. This is very much in that vein. I like her lyrics mostly, but she's great.
Yeah.
I think she's ex-Disney Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Escape. Vampire's a nice ballad song in a slightly sunnier Billie Eilish style.
One of the things I'll say here, which is interesting, a lot of these tracks, if you listen to them on streaming services, are full of their expletive original versions, right? What Now still do is they package up family-friendly edits, which is quite handy.
I'm glad about that because I bought this for my son for his birthday, which is one of the reasons I chose it. So I'm quite happy
not
to have him bitching and mofoing around the house.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, sweet. I said what I said. I'd rather be famous instead. There's a kind of front load of big hits here because actually track 2, 3, and 4 are three of the biggest tracks from last year. Next you've got Doja Cat, and then you've got Kenya Grace. And Doja Cat of note because it's got a really nice walk-on by sample by Dionne Warwick.
Dionne Warwick. And one of the great things about this for the older lady or gentleman is, as you may know, I invented the phrase pop elite itself many years ago to describe sampling pop, which had just come in then. What I love being older is sample spotting. There are so many And samples have got more blatant again. There was a period when they were blatant when they came in, because, you know, you just sampled a chunk. Then they got very subtle, and you'd be like, isn't that a drum off? No, it can't be. There'll be like a hi-hat off a Dusty Springfield song. But now they're back to blatant again, and we'll be coming back to this. Yeah. There are several tracks on this that just ride on a sample.
Yeah.
Doja Cat's great. She's really funny. You know, let's hear it in this world for the fact that many records here, many songs here are funny and generally by women. Paint the Town Red is fantastic. It was a song I owned already, really, and it's great. And it's great that it has the Walk On By sample.
Yeah. And then, so we've got Kenya Grace, which was her major label debut, Strangers. She wrote it, produced it herself, and was only the second person after Kate Bush to do that.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's an interesting career, I think, to kind of watch, I think, is Kenya Grace, see where that goes. Actually, do you know, there's a lot of female artists here. We've got quite a run. We've got Peggy Goo.
I've got nothing to say. That was a fun one. It was just one of them sort of
Gypsy
Woman-style catchy hook tunes.
Yep. That's one of those two-minute loops, basically. Works perfectly
works
well.
Works for me.
Yep. And then Kylie and Tension. Follow-up to Padam Padam.
Ironically, probably the most sexual record on here. It's very naughty. Kylie with a very modern sound effect on her voice, which means it could literally be anyone, this song. And it doesn't actually sound much like Kylie. But then she's Kylie Minogue. She's kind of, and I mean this kindly, she is kind of the Asda Madonna. She's had a sort of parallel career to Madonna's, but nicer, a little more fluffy and poppy. But again, if you've said to me in 1988 that Kylie Minogue would become a heritage legend of popular music and streams of people would flood to her concerts, I mean, she had her imperial fade. You know, I was a big SAW fan, sort of, and the Better the Devil You Know era is one of the greatest imperial phases in popular music, so I always wish her well. Yeah. It's a fine record, nothing wrong with it.
Of note, released on both CD single and cassette single. Do we still call them singles? I don't know.
What do people do with cassette singles? Do they put them on a show? I don't believe that people are going out and buying Walkmans.
I don't think so. Anytime I've seen them in record shops, he says, in inverted commas, they're sitting on a shelf for like £10 a time.
It's bizarre. Yeah. And we sound like anthropologists.
I know.
I went into what I believe is called a record store.
I know. And you know, see, when I was going through this getting prepped, I thought, Ian, avoid sounding like an old man as much as possible. I need almost like a sticky note above the computer to say that.
I've got a list pinned up here. It's like, don't complain about the word vinyls. Don't say it's political correctness gone mad. Don't say, you'll probably get cancelled for saying that nowadays.
Yeah.
Million Dollar Bill was fun. Mm. I enjoyed the X connection thing as a way of getting the names together.
Yeah.
It might be the shortest thing here. It's 209, according to my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Disconnect, it's nice to see Chase and Status.
Yeah.
To me, they are from the olden days.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see them. And we come now to, I think my favourite here is Issy Cross, Bittersweet Goodbye. Because it rides the sample, Bittersweet Symphony. And it's, to me, it's sort of brilliant because, of course, the sample gave the Verve their hit with Bittersweet Symphony.
Yeah.
It would have been a piece of moany old drivel if it hadn't been for lifting an orchestral version of The Last Time from an Andrew Luger Oldham Rolling Stones covers album.
Well done.
And the lawyers for the Rolling Stones sued the Verve for using the sample, quite rightly, since the record is basically Richard Ashcroft moaning over this sample. And Issy Cross has taken the sample and sings over it, and it's a great record.
Yeah.
And did you know that Issy Cross's middle name is Victoria, which is brilliant? You know, her parents deserve, ironically, a medal. She's got other names as well in the middle.
That totally worked for me. You're right, though. The sample's up there front, isn't it? It's not hidden.
No, she is basically singing the sample.
Yeah.
It basically is Bittersweet Symphony done as a pop single, and I really like it.
Yeah. There's a run there, I struggled for facts, on Sonny Federa, MK. MK pops up a lot on these albums. And Billy Gillis. There's a kind of dance run. And then we get to Stormzy and Ray.
Yeah.
Ray just eating up the music industry at the moment.
Well, she's got a backstory. She was chained into a dungeon with a copy of her album and not let out for 20 years. And finally, somehow she escaped and released this record into the world.
Yeah.
And there's some truth in that. But yeah, she's been getting all the plaudits now. older people go, sounds like Amy Winehouse. And it's like, yes, it's quite common for singers to sound a bit like people from the past.
Yeah.
That has happened before. But she's got a unique brand. I really like her, and I really like her attitude.
Mm.
And the music she makes is an interesting and odd mixture
of
different bits of things. She's at the core of it, and she's kind of stylish, which is nice.
There's a kind of pop stardom about her, which is nice.
Yeah.
And a kind of uniqueness.
It's nice that we still have pop stars, regardless of the accessibility of music and all that kind of stuff. We still need people who we believe are somehow better than us.
Yes. How do we pronounce? Is it SZA?
I think it's SZA. She has become the official emblem of people on Twitter going, I don't know who's on at Glastonbury. So I... Oh, no, I'll call up the Evis family and alert them to this, that you must only have access. Yeah, and then you've also got slightly younger people who are a bit hip going like, I thought she was in the Wu-Tang Clan, which I think I may have actually tweeted. I don't know much about her. I think it's a good record.
This track spent 10 non-consecutive weeks at the top of the Billboard Top 100. Mosquito by Pink Panthers. Yeah, and then Nicki Minaj.
Yeah, I mean, always great. She's always brilliant, been around for a while.
Yeah.
Makes great records.
Right, Post Malone. I was listening to this album and there was a kind of R&B style and then this comes on. I've written down here, sounds like something from 1973. Could be Colin Bluntstone. And he whistles on it as well.
I didn't like this at all. I don't know anything about them. I like the name, but no, I thought this was dreary,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, it kind of sits in the middle of this. I don't know. Olivia Dean and Leon Bridges, the hardest part. I've written down here, more mellow. Bridging the gaps between neo
really
soul and pop sensibilities. I've stolen that off the internet. I've not written that myself.
It suffers, as always, for being next to a memorable track.
Yes, it does. Stephen Sanchez, Until I Found You. Georgia,
ran me up and on. I was excited because I didn't know who he was, and I'm like, what the hell is this? Because it was just, you know, in the olden days, we would say, is this from a jeans advert? Or this is like Chris Isaak. Yeah, he's like a talented rich... I can't remember the name of the person I'm about to insult, so I'll stop it. But basically, yeah, he's recreating a 1950s vibe.
Yeah.
He's had the classic Elton John's done a duet with him. I mean, I think they need a cage for Elton John because, to be honest, he roves the world looking for people to appear on stage with and do duets with. And to be honest, he's a danger to shipping in that respect. Yeah, this is a nice record. It's that weird thing of being unusual by virtue of being completely retro.
Yep. I mean, he's only 20. And again, that's one of my sticky notes. Don't talk about the age of people, Ian. But he is only 20, Nashville-based. So, and again, it's that kind of... I suppose, again, it's how TikTok isn't always just about one genre of music. TikTok can actually be a vehicle for anything these days. And spent, I think, the best part of a year on the top 40. Again, don't mention top 40 too much. But, you know, still, that is, in any decade, that's a hit. Right, so Never Gonna Stop, Rick Astley, nearly.
He knows what he's doing, calling it that. I mean, he's got a brilliant voice. Definitely would have been called a Radio 2 record 10 years ago. I don't know what it would be now.
Mm.
It's kind of perfectly fine. Certainly not what I would have called a single.
No.
The days when we had singles. It's not bad. I mean, I love Rick Astley. He's a very nice man.
Mm.
He's deserved his success. He's got a fantastic voice. If he hadn't been a Stock Aitken and Waterman client, well, he wouldn't have been successful. If he hadn't been a Stock Aitken and Waterman client and had a musical career, it would have been taken a lot more seriously, which is a real shame because Never Gonna Give You Up is an absolutely brilliant record. All his songs are pretty good. He deserves the success that he's found and... just wish him luck, really.
He's got a market. I've actually written Radio 2 here, so I'm still there, to be honest. as is James Blunt. Yeah, this is so we've got Rick Astley, James Blunt, and Take That on here.
Oh, I hate James Blunt. I literally don't care. All his tweets is like, oh, he's actually got sense of humour. It's like, oh, wow, is that his big achievement, taking the mickey out of himself? Because I can do that for him, if you like. Oh, were you in the army? I just think he's... His records are tiresome. He's tiresome. This is tiresome.
Yeah. And, you know, we're at the end of the first CD. It's kind of scooping up some of those songs that CD buyers would have heard on the radio and just positioning.
Scooping up is the right word.
Literally. When I was listening to this, I'm going, that's a melody. The dun, 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 dun. There's a kind of thing, which I thought, right, I better go and find it. So it comes from Ennio Morricone.
So, oh, right.
Right, there is there. But it was also used in a dance track in the early noughties called Chase the Sun. They used that track on the darts on the telly. So that James Blunt darts, yeah. Anyway, we'll move on.
But this is frying pan into the fire.
Take that, Windows.
I mean, I do not subscribe to Take That. I was a Robbie Williams fan for a while when his career, when he was Britpop, kicked off. And I did see him at Glastonbury do Angels, and it was a neat moment. But, oh, Gary Barlow is like, it's like if you told someone in a pub about George Michael and they weren't really listening and they made notes and they went home and built Gary Barlow. He's just such a potato of a pop star. And the rest of Take That, they're just kind of there because... I hate Take That. I really...
When I heard this...
It's a thing for a 62-year-old man to say, but I hate Take That.
When I heard this come out at the time, can I picture Gary Barlow in his house going, what other genre can I try and tap into that I've not done yet? And this got to number 4 in the real charts. Number 4.
Oh, God.
It's the perfect track to finish a CD with.
It's always been the case with Now... The brilliance of it is it doesn't, and I mean this currently, it doesn't have a critical brain. Mm. It doesn't have emotions. It doesn't say, we can't possibly have this. It's uncool. It's like, it was a hit.
Yep.
It is on. And the fact that it comes, you know, about 20 minutes after all the proper pop stuff, it's annoying because it's a traffic. It's like you've been on a really great empty motorway for ages going to California and then suddenly you hit a massive traffic jam and for some reason you're in on an industrial estate. That's what the end of this side is like.
Yeah, and you've got James Blunt in the car next to you waving at you, trying to tell you a joke.
Oh, God, making self-deprecating jokes.
And Gary Barlow giving you a thumbs up, probably, as well. Let's move straight across to CD2.
CD2 is much, much nicer. I think it's my favourite.
And it flows quite nicely as well. There's a sequence flows through them. Rolling Stones. We mentioned them already, but this is the comeback. Is it a comeback? What is a Rolling Stones comeback?
Well, you don't have comebacks now.
No.
They just, I think they go away. It's like, you know, immortal people in stories, right? And the way the immortal people live is they live their lives and then they disappear.
Hmm.
And then they come back and say, I'm his nephew. That's what the Rolling Stones, they've waited till everybody who thought the Rolling Stones were out of date has died. And then they come back, it's like, hi, we're the Rolling Stones from the 60s. And they have a new audience. There's people, you know, my age and your age, who might buy Mojo or not, who are like, oh, the Rolling Stones, of course, in 1962. But there are people like there who literally don't know who they are or care. And they're like, okay, they're these old guys. And they're finally judged on the record. Mm. I really like Angry. Really good single.
It was great. It's the first time on Now since 1994. Which was Love is Strong.
Oh, yeah.
The Voodoo Lounge, which was another great track as well, you know. And there's at least 3 or 4 different hooks in there.
Yeah. The big guitar riff, I keep singing Pretty Little Angel Eyes, which I think was a hit for Shawaddy Waddy.
Yes.
It goes, Pretty Little Angel Eyes.
Yeah.
It's a great. I mean, they've got a good producer who's about, I'm not going to mention ages, 9.
Yeah.
it's short. Well, it's not short, actually. It's 3:47. It's definitely comprised of my age role. It's probably... Yeah. Oh, the Take That track is 3 minutes 58. 4 minutes, oh, you swines.
Jeez, yeah.
It sounds 2 minutes long, which is a good trick.
It does. Now, within pop culture of 2024, it's just another track. There's no legacy hanging on to it. 62 years in the business now, since 1962. And I was thinking, so if you had had an artist who were 62 years old on the first Now album, they would have recorded the track in 1921.
Blimey.
I just throw that in for folk who are sitting on the train just now who are thinking, oh my goodness.
I think the Rolling Stones are the Doctor Who of rock.
Olivia Rodrigo again. Bad idea, right? All lowercase. This is again quite rocky.
Yeah, I really like it. It's kind of a bit of a new wave. It could almost have come out on an EMI punk and new wave compilation in 1979 or 1980. I just really like her stuff. It's just lots of energy. It sounds good. It sounds like rock and pop. The lyrics are great. You do think with all her money and success, she'd probably be a bit luckier with boyfriends. So I suspect there's a fictional element to this going on because she's either a terrible judge of character or she's making it up.
What is NME nowadays? Is it just online?
It's online. Sometimes there would be a paper one.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's sort of many identities now.
Because I think Hughes reappeared as something as well, as an AI online website or something people were moaning about. I don't know.
Yeah, everyone's very unhappy with Q because it's not even... They've just taken the logo and the brand. It's got nothing. It's nothing at all to do.
No, I mean, the reason I mention that is because this track, Bad Idea, Right, was the 12th best song of 2023 in NME, so tick, 7th best song in Guardian, and the 1st best song in Time magazine, not The Times, but Time magazine. But it's, yeah, it's genre hopping. In there, there's almost a 60s girl group thing going on that you could hear, you know, it's a bit like Mickey, you know, you've got that thing. So, yeah, brilliant. Another global icon, Billie Eilish. Handily put on my CD here from the motion picture Barbie, as if we didn't know. And yeah, what was I made for? The Oscar-winning Best Original Song of the Year, Best Song of the Year at the Grammys.
I mean, she's great. I love the fact that she makes the kind of record that, to be honest, could have been played on the John Peel show in about 1985. Weird, deep electronic ballads made in a bedroom. Yeah. This is particularly good because with soundtracks, she's actually already done a Bond. But she's pulled off the James Bond trick of writing a song that works in any context, but it's also very specifically about the movie in question.
Yeah.
The lyrics are so well done. It really is Barbie questioning her existence, which is, of course, the theme of the movie, but also could apply to anybody. So, yeah, it's a cracker, and it is a pop song. Yeah. What I like about Billie Eilish is you think, that's a single, inverted commas, but... She makes the Young Marble Giants look like Led Zeppelin. There's one for the dads. There's a reference for the young people.
Tick. There we go. Brilliant. From two global megastars, we go to Tom Odell.
I thought this was great. I think I've only ever seen Tom Odell reading a story on CBeebies, but... No, I don't know anything about him, but this is a really good, catchy song. I liked it a lot.
When I originally put in Black Friday, it came up with Steely Dan first, so sorry, dads.
No, don't do that.
Not going to go there. And then Lana Del Rey, that's if there's a bit of a sequencing miss for me. I would have maybe put Tom Odell somewhere else here, because actually Billie Eilish into Lana Del Rey works for me. But this is an old Lana Del Rey song.
Is it?
But this was one, again, that went a bit viral, and this is from her debut from 2012.
What's going on?
Well, this is what I've written. But it turns out that somebody had done what's like a kind of melded track. Somebody had mixed it with something else online. And then obviously they'd used a bit of her song and stuff. They used to call them mashups, didn't they, or something?
They did.
Stuck it onto TikTok.
Oh, no, that's definitely on the list. They used to call them mashups. Tick that off.
Tick. There we go. Yeah. So they'd done that. They probably speeded it up a bit as well. But again, from Now's point of view, this only got to number 78. So it doesn't matter. The chart figures almost now don't matter. It's where people are getting this in different places.
It makes sense. People are probably saying, oh, you should get that on. You should put that on the album. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Sia. Is it Sia? I keep asking.
I think it's Sia.
Is it Sia or Sia or Sia? Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, this is like Last of the Summer Wine, isn't it?
It's just getting... I know. It's okay. There's acts coming up later I know a lot about. So, yeah, and this is Gimme Love.
It's fine.
Yeah.
She's one of those people that I sound very patronising, and of course could not do what she does, but it's fine.
Right, okay, here's three tracks that are worth probably pulling together. The collaboration section, people that we know singing together with other people that we know. So, Sam Smith, Back Again, and Madonna, Vulgar, and that's the name of it.
I love it. I think there's an awful lot of dislike of both these artists, and I can see it might be terribly uncool, but I like the fact they sort of address the elephant in the room that, you know, they may be considered by some people to be gammy nowadays. I think it's a pretty good song. It's not the greatest song in the world, but it's pretty good. It's very short. It's probably the shortest record Madonna's ever made.
Yeah.
That would be worth looking up, nerds.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. I mean, I sort of touched on the thing of Sam Smith deliberately dressing like a weirdo and people getting really upset about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the golden rule of pop is that if you're good looking, you can dress like you, right? But if you're a bit heavy up top, then you can't. Madonna is just fantastic. At her own Oscar party, she wore a sign around her neck saying, "Do not talk to me, I'm tired," which I just love the fact that she's still Madonna.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a documentary where they had the two writers of Like a Virgin, which is one of my favourite songs of hers. were introduced to her at a party, and they said, "This is Starbird, blah, blah, blah." They wrote "Like a Virgin," and she made a vomiting gesture and walked off. So she's just great. To be honest, not her records aren't always great now, and it's always such a relief to me when she makes one that is pretty good.
Yeah.
So Vulgar would definitely go on my Madonna playlist.
And the first appearance of Madonna on a Now album.
This is?
Yep. Believe it or
You're
not,
kidding me.
This is the first. She's never appeared on a numbered Now album. I know there's a lot of genre hopping now in the Now series. This is the first time she's ever appeared, because she famously didn't license for many, many years.
Oh, my God. So, she's been sneaked in under Sam Smith's voluminous robes then.
Exactly. So
that is a fantastic pop fact.
Yeah. So there we go. Took 116 albums in 40 years. We got there.
I bet she's furious. I bet she finds out, she'll be smashing vases.
Will.i.am and Britney, Mind Your Business.
Loved it. Yeah, just a daft pop record with a catchy playground chorus.
And then Timbaland, Nelly Furtado and Justin Timberlake.
Weirdly, this got me, I was on the train listening to this and I just started thinking about, do all these people know each other, and trying to do the timelines and thinking, these people are kind of the same generation.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what era is it. The noughties, probably. Mm. They all started about the same. And I just sort of imagine them meeting up in the studio and, like, knowing each other a bit. Like you might know someone who's a regional manager in a different office of the same company. That was a fruitless fantasy, since I never bothered to look it up or discover if they were friends in any way. I'm always confused when Timbaland and Justin Timberlake work together.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
They've done it before, I know. I wonder if they have a rule that you can't mention the names, or they just get it out of the way, go, okay, Timbaland, Timberlake, there we go, we've said it, move on. While Nelly Furtado just looks on, annoyed. I thought this was jaunty.
Yeah.
Of the three, I prefer Vulgar.
You mentioned that they don't overstay the welcome, these tracks, which is brilliant.
Yeah, which was not always, has not always, is generally the rule in pop music, is that as it becomes more self-aware, pop music starts to get more bloated. You know, you look in the 60s when the Beatles record Hey Jude, and there's MacArthur Park, and prog rock comes in the 70s. And this isn't really happening, because phones do not lend themselves. No one's going to look at their phone for one song for 20 minutes.
No. From speaking to my daughter, I ask her, how do you find this music? When do you swipe? What is it that actually makes you listen, and how long for? So from that point of view, pop culture has to react to the way people are consuming these tracks. Justin Timberlake would have put a track out in the mid-noughties that would have been 6 minutes long of kind of rambling R&B, whatever. Now it's like, no, because folk are just going to go swipe straight away.
That's the other thing just occurred to me about collaborators. It helps with the attention span, because halfway through a record, they completely change the vocalist.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and it used to just be they'd have a rap, but now they have a singer.
Yeah.
Replace another singer, and works for me.
Jazzy, Feel It, the club edit.
I slightly feel there have been 1,000 records by people called Jazzy called Feel It, club edit.
That and Gorgon City just washed over me very quickly. Sorry if you're listening. Kai, FOMO Gibbon and Matt Rack'n'Ruin Robson Scott.
Matt Rack'n'Ruin Robson Scott, there's a name.
Number 87, pop hits. There we are. And then Leanne, featuring Aira Starr. Now, Leanne was from Little Mix. Okay, Selena Gomez, I just want to talk about Only Murders in the Building, actually.
This is it. Yeah. This is, because that was obviously, I was thinking, it's a good song. It's a nice spoken ending. Very rare in pop. Virginia Plain by Roxy Music. Very rare in pop to end with a spoken word bit. It's a good record. It's in, interestingly, the Olivia Rodriguez style, even down to a boyfriend diss, a little bit of Billie Eilish. She's obviously a lot older than Olivia, but it's interesting because it's, again, a repositioning. She's done, and I just imagine her agent going, you know what would be good for your singing career? Do 3 series of a detective murder with some pensioners. And, you know, it's a great show. It's sort of Woody Allen detective show. She's very good in it, but she's obviously there as to distract people from the old people staggering about. But this is what all pop people do with their acting careers, is they go, oh, bum, people think I'm an actor. I better get a record out. It's obviously not aimed at the people who watch Only Murders in the Building.
No.
It would be called Dead Soon then if it were. No, it's a good record.
Number 4 in Bulgaria.
Of course it is.
They know their synth-driven electro-pop, the Bulgarians, famous for it. Mae Stevens and Meghan Trainor.
You sound like you're struggling for things to say about it.
Well, I didn't. Have you got any pearls of wisdom on that one?
Well, just that it is the one that I was talking about with the two vocalists thing. And there's a very, very odd tradition. There's a very odd tradition with the male duet. Because with the male duet, as you may know, there are generally ground rules that they must be singing to the same woman. They are not singing to each other. Obviously, that's less of an issue now. But I mean, one of my favourite records is Something's Got a Hold on My Heart by Mark Almond and Gene Pitney. I love that. I went to the recording of the video in Las Vegas and met them both. And Gene Pitney is now one of my all-time heroes. He was such great. But one of the things that was important for him was it must be clear that he is not singing to Mark Almond. Oh, sorry, I'm rambling. But this is in the tradition of I Know Him So Well. This is two women singing about the same man, I think.
Yeah.
I haven't analysed it.
See, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that now because that's making it sound slightly more interesting than when I've listened to it first time.
I just liked it. I liked it enough to look at my iPod Touch as it was playing and go, oh, what's this called?
This was Mae Stevens' follow-up to her very successful 281 million streaming if we ever broke up. So, yeah, so she's doing fine. And she signed to EMI. So she's doing fine.
Meghan Trainor, of course, she's everywhere.
I don't know who's Elaine Page and who's Barbara Dixon. I'm going to have to go back and listen. S Club 7. So we talked about Michael Cragg's book earlier, which Reach for the Stars, which is a brilliant book if you've not read it, where he basically starts in 96 and runs up to 2006.
Yeah, it starts with Spice Girls.
And it's just a brilliant kind of personal interview bits all the way through it from a lot of the people that were there. And both of these acts are in the book quite predominantly. S Club and Sugar Babes are in there. So you've got S Club, These Are the Days, and then Sugar Babes, When the Rain Comes.
I mean, it's really interesting because S Club, because they've had tragedy and stuff, and it's quite difficult to put that onto what was essentially kind of almost a kids' band, even though they were S Club juniors. S Club were always a much younger demographic. They had their own show. They were kind of sweet and innocent. And what they've done is exactly the right thing. They've done a kind of, which is, despite the title, a kind of nostalgic-sounding Our Friendship-type record, which works really well in the tradition of the Spice Girls ballads, which were also kind of non-sexual, to be honest, even if Two Become One was clearly about shagging with a condom.
Yeah.
Anyway, rambling. But yeah, it's not a bad song. It's got that kind of reunion feel to it, looking back, slightly wistful memories. And again, with a deceased member in the group, that's always a smart thing to do. Not a towering record, but it's not bad at all.
No, I've written Jaunty. But in a good way, because it actually,
in a good way.
You know, they could, as you say, they could have done quite a kind of somber ballad, but actually that's not what S Club were about. So, and it works well, and the lyrics are quite nice. And Sugar Babes, back, I know, which version? So this is line up one,
right.
Version one, back after various other versions have been rebooted. But this is the original 2000 launch, again, from Mutia and Keisha and Siobhan.
I was disappointed because Sugar Babes were so great. Freak Like Me, Round and Round, Push a Button. They were just brilliant, brilliant songs. It was just so... They were nothing to do with the girl group thing or the pop scene of the time. They were really, really great singles. This is not a really great single. I don't really see what it's for. It doesn't sound like the Sugar Babes to me.
There was always a slight edge to the Sugar Babes.
There was totally.
Yeah, you know, they sat outside the whole thing looking in.
To me, it has got that kind of regal vibe. Because as solo artists, they were very interesting. It brings back that solo energy, which is what, you know, people like Take That did. When they came back, there was a bit of new Robbie in the mix as well as new Gary. It's just not a brilliant song. And why is this record by the Sugar? There's no reason for this to be a Sugar Babes record.
Hopefully more round the corner. Let's see what happens, Sugar Babes. Duran Duran. Black Moonlight.
This is one of those... I hate Duran Duran, but this is... They do make records that even I like. I loved Notorious. Ordinary World is fantastic. Even some of the early singles, but they were punk traitors for people of my age. They were New Romantic traitors. They were just they just wanted to be famous. Mm. Simon Le Bon sings like a goose at its own funeral. There's just something clunky about them. They wanted to be Japan very badly. And as the old joke goes, they achieved that. They were Japan very badly. This is one of their sort of generic later period singles. And it's fine. It's catchy. I quite liked it.
On the album, so the album was called Dance Macabre. It was a Halloween-themed album. They do cover versions of, amongst others, Paint It Black, Spellbound by Susie and the Banshees. They do a cover of Ghost Town and a cover of Psycho Killer. As one of the new tracks on the album, This Is Fine.
I was actually at the NMA when they did their first covers album, Thank You, which is honestly one of the low points of human history. I mean, they did a version of White Lines, which was brilliant. Mm. Because for some reason, a song about being addicted to cocaine and reveling in it worked really well when sung by Duran Duran. But they also did 911 is a joke. And they were right.
Yeah.
Because everyone just said 911 is a joke is a joke. It's really weird. It's so easy to do a good cover. Mm. But they pick songs that you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
And then they do them very badly.
Yeah.
It is literally like going into a model village wearing Wellington boots, drunk, and smashing everything up.
Yeah.
I think it really tells you something when a band does an album of cover versions and their own material is the best stuff.
I didn't know that the Killers were on their second best of album, but they seemingly are.
Second best of.
And this was the launch single from the second best of, which was called Rebel Diamonds. And this is Your Side of the Town.
Is this the obligatory new song recorded for the compilation?
That's the one, yep.
My main issue with it is it has almost exactly, lawyers please note, the same melody as True Faith by New Order.
Oh, yeah, it does.
You can sing along.
Yeah.
You can sing along to it. And, of course, the Killers took their name from a New Order video where there was a fake band in it, and Brandon Flowers appears on the last New Order album.
Yeah.
So he can't deny it. I mean, I'm not saying it's theft or anything like that. It's just quite a similar melody. Killers are one of those bands I just don't really get. They seem to be like a cross between the Strokes for Queen fans.
Yeah.
Or Queen for Strokes. This sort of doesn't gel, this mixture of kind of glammy. They're like a crap version of Placebo. There's a reference for the kids.
I think we need to go back into Wikipedia and add that one in. Let's be honest.
It's a pleasant record, but most of the good bits are familiar.
Yeah, and we're still in this world where Mr. Brightside is still floating about being listened to 50 times every second for some reason.
It's weird. It's like, I think there are kind of animals that burrow into gaps where other animals don't go, and I think that's what Mr. Brightside is.
So we're in the slide out now of the album, but before we do that, here's Chrissie Hynde and the Pretenders. Again, another one of those new tracks. Legacy artists?
Legacy artists, heritage rock.
Heritage rock, Mike Reed, if you're listening. this was okay. I would have said in the kind of typical Q3-star way, this is functional.
Yes. Has it got Johnny Marr on it?
Checks his notes. Possibly. He's usually floating about, Johnny Marr. He is available. this was just the Pretender. I mean, you can't knock it. I mean, it sounds great. It's the Pretenders. But where does it sit in the whole canon of work?
I mean, I can knock it because while the lyrics are good, there's no distinctive guitar bit. Mm. All the great Pretenders records have either got a really fantastic melody or a really memorable guitar. You think of Back on the Chain Gang, for example, or Kid. Or one thing that really interests me about singer-songwriters or proper songwriters, the ones who do songwriting weekends, you know, they're all friends with each other, is that the longer they go on, the more boring the songs get. And I think, is that because they're losing it because they're getting old? Or is it because when you really get into songwriting, you go, oh, listen to this. And they go, that's amazing. And you're listening and go, what? So Elvis Costello, who I really like, makes nice records, but then you put on Oliver's Army and it's like, whoa, and this is perfectly fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you put it next to Back on the Chain Gang and it's like, I'll just keep Back on the Chain Gang.
Yeah. Dermot Kennedy, James Arthur and Kian Ducrot, I'm kind of putting them together because as I was listening to them, they all almost became slightly similar.
Yeah, I don't know what you call this kind of music, but it's...
I don't know, it's... honest, earnest, guitar-type tracks. Dermot Kennedy and Cian Ducrot are definitely Irish. I've got that much. You can hear it coming through. I know that James Arthur, he won X Factor in 2012. Cian supported Ed Sheeran, so we'll let that drift off.
for me, these songs are kind of way more emotional than they should be. They just seem to be getting into a terrible state about nothing much. They are really, you just think that their true love had buried them alive. Over-emotional, but without a song to go with. I hate it when people go, oh, there's no tune. Well, there isn't. They're just whiny.
So maybe this is why Olivia Rodrigo and Billie Eilish are writing all these songs about having no boyfriends, because they've met the likes of Dermot Kennedy with his guitar and thought, man, no wonder.
You're right. If you accept that the gene pool for pop stars is other pop stars, if these are the men, then...
Bad idea, right? Indeed, Olivia.
Indeed.
I hover at Luke Combs because over the last few months, this song has gone amazingly viral. Fast Car, his cover of Tracy Chapman's song, which he then sang with Tracy Chapman.
I don't know the backstory. I mean, it's boring because it's the same as Fast Car. It adds nothing to it. It just subtracts, to be honest, because there's something in Tracy Chapman's delivery which made it a hit. That, you know, it sounds desperate. It's just, I was interviewing the Pet Shop Boys when this came out, and Chris Lowe is the least sympathetic man in the world. He actually said, if Tracy Chapman wants a fast car, I've got one she can have. It's a Porsche. You think, yeah, Chris, that's really down with the vibe there.
You know, when she sings that song about leave tonight or we can die this way, there's a genuine belief that actually this is the last chance to escape. I don't get that hearing this slightly kind of Nashville'd up version of by Luke Combs.
You mentioned AI. It's like if you typed in Fast Car by Tracy Chapman, only sung by a cowboy, he literally sounds like someone who's heard Fast Car and wants to do a version of it. I'm also slightly annoyed at the sort of the coverage of like, oh, thanks, Luke Combs, for bringing Tracy Chapman back. And it's like, oh, I'm sure she's so grateful.
However, again, this is, I suppose, what Now does. And I use that phrase, scoop up again, and I mean that in the best way. All the latest tracks, for some reason, you know, and actually puts them there to represent and then give old men like ourselves a chance to shout at them.
Old men shouting at country music. There's a podcast.
Indeed. I'm working on that one, episode one.
Old men shouting at pop is a genuine good name.
Well, do you know, if we're going to finish with pop, let's finish with Agnetha.
Is this from a new album?
It's from her latest album, which came out, A+, that was called.
Yes, it's perfectly nice. It's odd because the whole thing of the ABBA mystique is, again, like one of those acts that they would split up and there would be a great fuss and we're never talking or we're never working again. And then they go, all right, we'll just do this. And they do the VR show, which I have no intention of going to see. I don't care how many middle-aged pop fans are gushing over it. But every so often, the women from ABBA, fortunately not the men, do release genuinely really good, really good solo albums.
Yeah.
Nate has done some brilliant stuff over the years, and Free too. And this, without the context, this, and I heard the last ABBA album, it was not bad. This is kind of charming and nothing really.
One review I found called it a slice of well-constructed lightweight pop.
Yeah, it is. It's, I think sometimes we have high expectations and we think, oh, she should be doing some either heart-rending folk thing that takes her back to her roots or a massive epic. But it's just a nice little song.
And it rounds off CD2. It sits exactly where a song should be on CD2 of a Now album.
Taking us out gently, leading us by the hand and saying, did you enjoy yourself?
Exactly. We have got through 47 tracks of Now 116. What were the highlights? What were the tracks you'd keep?
Oh, Sam Smith and Madonna, which is not something everyone would say, I realise. The Rolling Stones, I really enjoy that. Both Olivia Rodrigo tracks. They were great. Britney and Will I Am, Mind Your Business. So many things here, it's quite hard to go through and remember. I think The Weeknd, Stormzy and Ray is pretty good.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about Stormzy's contribution, which he hilariously is just saying, Thursday's tight. Britney, we're just going through the week going, ooh, it's a bit tricky. Oh, I don't know. It's like, you know, I've got builders in. Oh, Tuesday. Did I say Tuesday? So that's kind of fun. Doja Cat.
Yeah.
That was great. I mean, I'd keep them all, to be honest, because again, the weird thing about the Now albums, as you mentioned at the start, the fact that they are sequenced.
Yeah.
Rather than the KTEL thing of just chucked in. This one has even got a bit of a nod to the old days when the end of CD4 would be the Jesus and Mary chain and U2.
Yeah.
CD2, sorry. there is a rock section here of sort, which I always like because it was kind of an island of Mardi Gits who didn't fit in. Yeah. But yeah, the long version is that I would keep all these because this is an album. This is a double album. It's not just thrown together selection.
So would you say the compilation's still in a healthy state then, yeah?
I picked this without hearing it because I wanted to get in at the deep end and I wanted to talk about modern pop. But I really, I will listen to this album a lot again and I really enjoyed it. And if this is the state of pop, and it is because there's new names and old names and middle old names. There's new old names and old new names.
Yeah.
So if this is the state of pop, it's in really good nick, I would say. This is literally the best album I have heard for several months. Personally speaking, obviously being my age, when I buy stuff on iTunes and stuff, it is often reissues or the new album by some old people.
Yeah.
And it's kind of depressing when you go on and go, oh, there's a new album, and it's the Pet Shop Boys. You're like, oh, they're, and you're like, oh, no, they've actually been going for 35 years.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah.
So to get new stuff, making myself buy 47 new songs has been a very pleasant and pleasurable experience.
Yeah. Because they sit as time capsules, they're often quite fascinating to go back to 5-10 years later and see, right, what actually still sticks? What is it that's still there? Here are the latest songs that are in the public consciousness for whatever reason, be it through the charts, TikTok, films, whatever. And there's an honesty about that.
It's what everyone says, but it's why people miss Top of the Pops. Because Top of the Pops was not, there was some gatekeeping, horrible word. I'll take that off the list. I said gatekeeping. But no one was in charge apart from the charts. Mm-hmm. If you were making this as a playlist for yourself, you or I might probably go, there's too many of them dreary ballads. And like, Fast Car, really? Does that? Yeah. But this is a good robot. There are many bad robots now. The Now albums, A, they're the tradition, they're Top of the Pops in exile, and B, they are good robots.
David, thank you so much for joining us here on Back to Now and taking me to a suitably uncomfortable, very modern phase of pop music.
Thank you, Ian. I really enjoyed myself. Thank you so much.
It's been fantastic. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.